Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Floridians for Lawsuit Reform. Florida accounts for 8% of U.S. property insurance claims, but 76% of the country's property insurance lawsuits, forcing higher premiums on Florida's families. Learn about solutions at fltortreform.com. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
A plan to term limit school board members in Florida gets blowback from rural Republicans.
Every time it rolls around, they can't get anybody to step up to the plate because there's not enough people in the county that's interested in running for education.
Also tonight, it took some heavy negotiation, but a policing reform bill is now up and running in the Florida legislature.
Let's speak with a unified voice and let's show the people of Florida what we are about and that we can come together and pass very good, positive legislation.
We'll also have stories about how Florida's unemployment system might be revamped and take a look at why a lack of hireable employees is becoming almost as big a problem as a lack of jobs. I'm Tom Flanagan, day four of week seven in the 2021 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. A plan to term limit local school board members is still moving in the Florida House. That follows an affirmative vote in the chamber's Education and Employment Committee today. Lynn Hatter reports the measure has undergone changes, but that may not be enough to get it to the finish line.
The idea to term limit school board members has been around for years, notes AFL-CIO lobbyist Rich Templin.
The solution, the suggestion has been offered year after year after year, something that everybody could get behind, is amend the state constitution to allow districts to enact term limits, right? I mean, we always want to try to get to the root of the problem of a piece of legislation. The root of the problem is that most of our counties don't have the authority under the constitution to enact term limits.
They still would not get that authority under Republican Representative Sam Garrison's proposal. Garrison's bill would put school board term limits to a statewide vote. Previous efforts to term limit school boards have gone nowhere, but Garrison's bill has gotten some traction this year. The original version of the proposal would have asked voters to impose 8-year term limits on school boards and barred members from being paid. Under the newest version of the bill, the compensation language is now gone.
It would apply only to terms of office beginning on or after November 8th of 2022 and is not retroactive. That means that current school board members would be able to serve at least an additional 8 years after adoption of the proposed amendment. Mr. Chair, that is the resolution.
Still, school boards and adjacent organizations are opposed to the measure. Lobbyist Chris Doolin notes many local school board races are highly competitive.
In every election cycle, in the last six election cycles, 40% turnover on your school boards. People either quit, they get beat, or they die. And that happens. So 2/3 of the races were competitive. So do we need more competition? Third, institutional knowledge is based on experience. The longer a member serves, the more they learned. That is not fundamentally bad.
There are also concerns the bill would hurt smaller and rural school districts. Republican Representative Melanie Bell represents DeSoto, Hardy, and part of Polk County. She says some of her counties have a hard time recruiting candidates.
In two of my counties, every time it rolls around, they can't get anybody to step up to the plate because there's not enough people in the county that's interested in running for education. I am a believer in term limits as however, I believe that you should allow each county to vote on what they decide that they want, the citizens of that county, not a statewide blanket.
Fellow Republican Representative Joe Harding represents Levy and part of Marion County. There are similar recruitment problems in his district.
It's been an issue for years. That's why you have a school board member that's served for over 20 years and one that served for 30 years unopposed. So there is going to be hard to implement in the rural counties, but at the end of the day, this is policy that I believe is good for the state of Florida as a whole. And so at the end of the day, I'm going to support this bill.
Garrison's bill has cleared its last committee and now heads to the chamber floor, but its future is uncertain. There is no Senate companion, and other school board term limit proposals have not been heard this session. I'm Lynn Hatter.
Following negotiations between the Florida Legislative Black Caucus and Republican House leadership, a police reform bill is now moving in that chamber. Kevin DeLorbe reports the proposal is generating bipartisan support and even getting props from law enforcement.
Police reform proposals have been largely stagnant in the Florida legislature following a summer of social justice protests. However, that's changed after the House Judiciary Committee passed a sweeping bill covering de-escalation training, limiting the use of chokeholds, and requiring officers to disclose any investigations they've been involved in. Republican Representative Cord Byrd presented the bill.
Trust in our public institutions is vital, and none more so than trust in law enforcement. And this PCB reflects the work and conversations over many months with and between lawmakers, law enforcement, and citizens. It is a bipartisan effort to promote best law enforcement practices and make them uniform throughout the state.
Democratic ranking member Representative Fentress Driscoll led the police reform negotiations in the House on behalf of the Black Caucus. Driscoll says this bill represents a collaborative effort.
When we can focus on policy in a bipartisan way, this is the result, right? We get to help make our communities safer. We get to lift up our law enforcement community. This is the positive impact that we can have in this process.
Democratic Representative Ramon Alexander also pointed to the benefits of bipartisanship. He talked about a conversation he had with House Speaker Chris Sprouse following the death of George Floyd, whose killing sparked protests around the country.
I remember after the issue with George Floyd, that tragedy, the first person to pick up the phone to call me was Speaker Sprouse. And we stayed on the phone for maybe 2.5-3 hours. And he said, Ramon, help me understand this. And we began to have a very in-depth conversation. And I think that is what this body should be all about.
The measure has also garnered support from multiple law enforcement organizations, including the Florida Sheriffs and Police Chiefs Associations. Other provisions of the measure include requiring an independent review when an officer uses deadly force and requiring officers to intervene when they see other officers use excessive force. The proposal also loops in the Kaya Roe Act, which would prevent officers from arresting children under 7 years old from forceful felonies. I'm Kevin DeLorbe.
A bill passed in the Florida House will give physician's assistants a broader scope of practice, but Regan McCarthy reports the measure is not the move to autonomous practice some PAs had hoped for.
Physician's assistants have been pushing for years to be able to open and run their own practices. Last year, lawmakers approved a move that lets qualified nurse practitioners work independently. Physician's assistants had hoped that privilege would extend to them this year. A bill filed by Hialeah Gardens Republican Senator Manny Diaz would have paved the way, but he amended his measure early in the process.
This amendment removes the autonomous practice of PAs from the bill and maintains or adds the following. Gives supervising physicians the ability to determine how many PAs he or she supervises by removing the 4-to-1 ratio. Supervision at the practice level is supported by the American Medical Association.
But even that change raised some concerns for lawmakers like Bartow Republican Senator Ben Albritton. He says lifting the state's cap on the number of physician's assistants one doctor can supervise could open the door for creating a whole new model for medicine, one he's not sure he'd like to see.
I worry about a model that could be, as an example, a doctor. There's one doctor and there's 10,000 PAs that are delivering medication, delivering services in like a CVS or a Walgreens or something like that. Without some cap, I just worry about what does that medicine delivery look like?
But Corinne Mixon with the Florida Academy of PAs says that hasn't happened yet and several states currently don't have caps. She says letting doctors decide how many PAs they can comfortably supervise will lead to an increase in access to care.
The American Medical Association, the state, National Association of State Medical Boards, they recommend letting the doctor be in charge of this decision. Right now, we have an arbitrary cap set at 4. We're one of the most limited states in the country in that regard, and we're one of the states with the worst healthcare access. And so we're not doing ourselves any favor by telling ourselves that we have actually evolved up to where practice standards are around the country. In fact, there are 20 states, or rather 18 states, who have no ratio cap whatsoever and allow that decision to be in the hands of the physician.
Mixon says, as it is now, PAs are supervised in directly.
PAs are licensed to practice under indirect supervision of doctors. So we've actually had legislators who have served here in the Florida House and Florida Senate who have had medical practices back home and been fully capable of serving here and representing the public as a state representative, while PAs completely managed the practice back home and saw patients all day long.
Despite Mixon's assurances, lawmakers have moved to cap the number of PAs doctors can supervise. It's still an increase over the current number. House sponsor Naples Republican Representative Bob Rommel amended his measure before it passed off the House floor.
This will limit the number of physicians assistant that a physician will supervise to the number of 10.
A similar amendment has passed in the Senate. That chamber's bill has one committee stop left to go. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Florida lawmakers are working to update the state's unemployment system following website crashes as millions of jobless residents sought benefits during the pandemic. Proposals to modernize the existing system and to increase payments are advancing in the legislature. Valerie Crowder reports the proposed changes would boost the state's national standing when it comes to how much money jobless residents receive in benefits.
Both Republican and Democratic state lawmakers have been calling for an overhaul to the state's buckled unemployment system, which has experienced issues for years. An analysis from an information technology firm shows the state's unemployment system wasn't designed to process the large volume of claims filed during the pandemic. Early in this year's legislative session, Democratic State Representative Anna Eskamani blamed past leadership for problems in the current system.
We're in the situation we are today because political leaders broke the unemployment system on purpose. And that's why we're here today, to bring it back to the 21st century, to fix it, and to create a system that is not going to torture you, but it's going to support you.
Republicans have also been pushing to change the state's unemployment system. Republican State Senator Aaron Bean is sponsoring a bill that would require the Department of Economic Opportunity to give the state system, also called the Connect system, a facelift. Bean explained during a Senate Appropriations Committee meeting, the need for modernization is urgent.
The server is down right now. The Connect system, they're hoping, fingers crossed, if the new roll of duct tape arrives, that it'll be up by 12 noon today. So I believe in the future that it'll be a different type of system.
Bills advancing in both chambers would require out-of-state online retailers to collect sales taxes to help boost maximum weekly unemployment benefits. The estimated $1 billion a year in additional revenue would help replenish the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund, which covers the cost of jobless benefits. With the extra dollars, lawmakers plan to increase the maximum weekly benefit from $275 to $375. Republican State Senator Jason Broder is the bill's sponsor. Earlier this session, he said the plan is modeled after other states' unemployment insurance payments.
We looked at the average of all weekly unemployment rate payments throughout the country, and it was about $375. Some had it at $380, some had it at $370, but nobody had it at $400, and nobody had it at $350.
An amendment to ensure seasonal workers may still receive unemployment benefits was approved in committee Thursday. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Gary Farmer added the provision.
For particularly in Florida, hospitality workers, so much of the work is seasonal, and so they may have been working during season, then they get terminated, and that last quarter may have been the most profitable quarter for them because it was still at the high point of the season. That doesn't get counted for their benefits. And so this would just remove the alternate base period. A vast majority of the states that used to have this provision have gotten rid of it, and it would allow claims to begin at the immediate quarter where the application was presented.
The Republican-sponsored bill to increase unemployment benefits got support from across the aisle, but a plan submitted by Democratic lawmakers would have gone further. It would have increased the maximum weekly benefits by a larger amount and would have extended the number of weeks that jobless workers could have received that assistance. Democratic State Senator Linda Stewart says though she was hoping the legislature would have done more, she's pleased that state lawmakers are doing something to address the issue.
Without this bill, Florida ranks dead last in the total benefit provided to unemployed claimants. we're inching our way forward to 47. So, I mean, we have to be thankful we're going up and we can't go down any further. So we're moving in the right direction. I'm happy to support anything that provides more benefits to unemployed Floridians. And I'm sure that this bill is going to, you know, at least get us in a much better position than we were last year.
The proposal to increase access to unemployment benefits and raise the maximum weekly benefit amount is now headed to the full state Senate chamber for a vote. I'm Valerie Crowder.
After a year of pandemic-induced joblessness, the employment pendulum is starting to swing. As more businesses get back to full operation, a growing problem is filling the available positions. Stephanie Lucky is the Human Resources Director for the Appalachie Center. That's a regional mental health services provider based in Tallahassee. As demand for those services has exploded, at least partly because of the pandemic, she says finding personnel to meet the demand has been a real problem.
Qualifications, experience is very, very important, and we have been finding it very challenging to get those positions filled.
Lucky has been working with Florida's CareerSource Network. That's the state's network of 24 regional job service centers. She says that collaboration has borne fruit.
CareerSource has been vital to our success in getting what applicants we do obtain. They've been vital in helping us get that.
But even though the number of hiring and help wanted signs in Florida is on the upswing, there are still lots of people who have trouble finding work. Tamara Lutz had more trouble than many. The former Panama City resident, coming off of a 2-year stint in prison, was driven from her hometown by 2018's Hurricane Michael. She wound up in Tallahassee. CareerSource Capital Region hooked her up with the ReFire program. That provides restaurant training for those with felony records. Today, Lutz has a job.
This also gave me the ability to get my own apartment, and I was able to get my son back and provide a stable environment for him. I have been at Cracker Barrel since October 2019 and have already achieved the highest ranking for kitchen positions. Until this month, I have walked to and from work every day, but I was able to take many steps needed to regain my driver's license yesterday.
In its most recent statistical year, CareerSource Florida President and CEO Michelle Dennard says the network has placed more than 143,000 people in jobs. Many of those positions required education and training, which CareerSource helps provide.
We can help with training opportunities for individuals, help them align the skills they already have. Maybe they had another job that sets them up perfectly for a career in construction or advanced manufacturing or food service.
The whole idea, says Dennard, is to make obsolete the assertions there are just no jobs or just no people willing to work.
The CareerSource Florida Network can help individuals whose jobs who may have been impacted by COVID-19, or maybe they're looking for a new path, and now's a great opportunity to connect with a local workforce development board who can help assess skills, let you know what positions are open in your area, and help you find that career path that works for you.
There's some concerning news on the COVID front. Health officials are seeing softening demand for COVID-19 vaccines in parts of Florida. It's easier to get appointments at many sites lately, and places that don't require them often experience short wait times. Governor Ron DeSantis made assurances this week that the state has ample vaccine supply, despite the pause on administration of the Johnson & Johnson doses. Dr. Marissa Levine, public health expert at the University of South Florida, says we're getting to the point where a lot of people eager to get a vaccine have gotten one or will soon. She tells Health News Florida's Stephanie Colombini the state now needs to put a stronger focus on convincing those reluctant to get the shots.
I do think it requires a rethinking of how to engage the remaining people in terms of meeting their concerns, answering their questions, and helping assuring that they have an opportunity to be vaccinated. You know, at this point, the general consensus is we probably need to get communities protected at the level of 80 to 85% of our population, partly because of a higher transmissibility rate of the variants. What we're seeing in Michigan right now, I think should be concerning to everybody, is that as long as you have a large segment of the population who are unprotected, you're at risk for what are really preventable hospitalizations and deaths. And I think that's the key message here, is now there is really no excuse. These are preventable. And I hope that we all see that we have both an obligation and an opportunity to actually prevent suffering, to prevent death. But it is going to require all of us participating, or at least the largest percent.
I think that community effort is really important, but are there challenges, especially in Florida, where, you know, we've been open for business for months with no restrictions, and maybe some people, especially young people, feel that COVID isn't as threatening to their lives as it is. How do you convince them that, yes, you should get this shot, and we as a community need you to get this shot?
Yeah, I think you really talk about an important group of folks who generally are not terribly amenable to being vaccinated in the first place for anything. And, you know, the way I'd approach it, again, I think is really understanding on an individual basis what people are thinking, where their communication is from, and what they're hearing. Because we do know that right now, that's the group of people who are most likely to get COVID. Hospitalizations are demonstrating, on average, younger people, and those folks are most likely to transmit it to other people who might be more susceptible to severe illness or death. So we're not out of the woods by any means, and young people play a critical role in that.
Are you concerned that this pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, to take a deeper look at it, after 6 out of the 7 million people or so who've gotten it developed these rare blood clots, are you concerned that could fuel hesitancy?
Well, so far, what we're seeing is 1 in a million type events, which, you know, admittedly is rare, but if you're the one, it's not rare. So, you know, my heart goes out to the folks who've been affected, but the reason we monitor vaccines and the reactions afterwards is for this very reason, is both to understand what's going on and to make sure the people who are affected get the care and help that they need. And none of this is risk-free. Getting a vaccine or deciding not to get a vaccine, those paths both pose risk. Right now, I would say vaccination still looks to be the best path for most people. So you're right, it could certainly fuel folks who are on a mission perhaps to prevent others from being vaccinated. But I think that the better approach is to be fully transparent and to put it into context in terms of whether this is rare or more a significant issue.
Dr. Marissa Levine with USF Health, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Interviewing Dr. Marissa Levine was Health News Florida's Stephanie Colombini. Time grows short for many bills still working their way through the legislative process. Gina Jordan has a look ahead.
Here's a look at what's coming up at the Capitol. The Florida Commission on Offender Review may soon have to consider an inmate's institutional achievements, lack of disciplinary reports, and potential lack of risk to the public in determining whether to grant parole. The bill requires the Commission and the Department of Corrections to jointly create a long-term inmate program to prepare inmates eligible for parole for reintegration into society. Healthcare providers charged with child-related sex crimes, such as human trafficking, may be hit with emergency suspension orders and be banned from working. Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book is sponsoring a bill after discovering that a physician who had previously treated her twins was facing child pornography charges. Lawmakers appear ready to clarify that a 2020 law requiring doctors to obtain written consent before conducting pelvic exams applies only to women. Legislation would define a pelvic exam and make clear that consent is required unless patients have emergency medical conditions or if exams are part of child protective investigations. Law enforcement agencies are already prohibited from using a drone to gather information, with some exceptions. An additional exception is now being considered. The law would no longer prohibit a state agency from using a drone to assess damage from a hurricane, wildfire, or other natural disaster. A proposal would designate Juneteenth or June 19th as a paid holiday for state workers. Juneteenth Day commemorates the end of slavery in the United States. And finally, the Senate Rules Committee spent hours Wednesday debating a sweeping elections package that would put additional restrictions on voting by mail. The committee ran out of time to vote on the bill, but is expected to take it up again. That's some of what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, tonight, we talked about reforms regarding two-legged police officers earlier in the show. Now we have a story about the four-legged variety. Injured police dogs would get priority medical help if they're injured on the job. That would be permitted under a bill approved by the Florida Senate and now awaiting a floor vote in the House. Robbie Gaffney reports the measure would put the canine officers at the front of the line as long as no humans on the scene need medical attention or transport.
According to the Officer Down Memorial page, which tracks officer deaths, 48 canines have been killed in the line of duty in Florida. Port Orange Republican Senator Tom Wright is sponsoring a measure aimed at saving these dogs' lives when they're injured in the line of duty. During a committee meeting on the bill, he asked lawmakers to put themselves in the shoes of a police officer with a canine partner.
Your partner lives with you. It's one of your family. And you're dispatched to a crime scene as the backup. That's what you normally are. You're the backup. The officers are holding whatever's going on under control. And so your dog is the first person in. And your dog is injured by the perpetrator, shot, stabbed, in some way maimed.
According to a staff analysis, police dogs are often used to chase after fleeing felons and can be caught in the line of fire while on the job. In 2018, a police canine with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office was shot and killed. In 2020, a canine who was working for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives became trapped in a car when it caught on fire. The dog was saved by the Jacksonville Fire and Rescue Department.
That decision actually saved that canine's life.
That's Volusia County Sheriff Mike Chitwood, who supports Wright's bill. He says the person who gave the approval to treat and transport the dog faced blowback afterward.
They were then chastised. How dare you use resources for a dog? And I think that caught the ire of a lot of people saying, hold on here, this isn't just a dog. You know, this is part of what we do to keep our community safe. This is part of the deputy's family. This is this animal. We invest thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of dollars on treatment care, and it deserves, these working animals deserve to be treated in the best way possible.
And that's one of the reasons Wright's bill has received support from Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody.
Currently, paramedics and EMTs are not specifically permitted to transport our officer canines that are injured.
Moody also says if a paramedic decides to help an injured canine officer, they could be held liable if something goes wrong. Wright's bill would give paramedics and emergency medical technicians a liability shield if they choose to help an injured canine officer. Moody says last year nationwide, 130 canine officers were injured in the line of duty. Wright's bill comes after the Florida legislature in 2019 passed a bill that increases the penalty for causing harm to a police canine from a third-degree felony to a second-degree felony. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Valerie Crowder, Robbie Gaffney, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Stephanie Colombini. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us every evening at this time throughout the 2021 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Floridians for Lawsuit Reform. Florida accounts for 8% of U.S. property insurance claims, but 76% of the country's property insurance lawsuits, forcing higher premiums on Florida's families. Learn about solutions at fltortreform.com.